Today, we have got Sarah with us, who is 20 years old. She's bravely telling her story for the first time. I have never heard of anything like this before in my life, and I have done some research on it, and I'm just going to read you a little bit of what I have read. So, what is PGAD? That stands for Persistent Genital Arousal Disorder. Experts characterize persistent PGAD as unrelenting, spontaneous, and uncontainable genital arousal, mostly in females. A person with PGAD can experience spontaneous orgasms that do not resolve arousal, and the arousal does not result from sexual desire. PGAD can lead to ongoing physical pain, stress, and psychological difficulties due to an inability to carry out everyday tasks. The condition can affect females of all ages. However, experts have not clinically confirmed the incidence of PGAD, as many people with the condition feel too embarrassed or ashamed to seek medical help. So it's very brave of Sarah to speak out. Now, I immediately thought of a situation from Arizona. There was a guy housed with us, and his man part was always inflamed. And the youngsters were like, wow, that's so cool that your man part is always inflamed. But he said, no, this is a symptom of a serious medical condition to do with his blood and stuff, and he could actually die. So these are things to be taken very seriously. And Sarah, you know, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
And telling us about this. Do you just want to tell us a little bit, before we get into it more, do you just want to tell us a little bit about you, your background, and how you first came to notice this when it first started?
So I first noticed it when I was around 14. It wasn't just a sort of normal day. I didn't realize what's going on at that point. It's just I could feel a sensation which I couldn't really describe. And it was quite neutral. I just started worrying when it, you know, didn't just kept being there, and I could never escape it. It was sort of started to be a trap later on.
Is that around the time when you started your period?
It was before.
Before?
It was before. I started my period before. I don't think it's sort of correlated in that sense.
No.
So how many times a day can this happen?
So with me, I sort of feel it's every day you have sort of discomfort. So I've made scales from, I'm never sort of in zero. Let's say I'm sort of 3-4 scales, and it's hard to concentrate. And it's just like you have your mind is somewhere else in a sort of crotch, and it's unpleasant. But yeah, I try to be positive.
So you're saying there's always a permanent feeling there, but then it climaxes throughout the day, is that?
Yes, I feel like it accumulates, and the stress makes it worse. So I feel like it can't be stopped. I can't escape it. And then there is an attack, and sort of you would think that it would be over, but it's just worse. And then it's a lot of pain, so pelvic pain, a lot of... and I do sort of can faint from the pain, and yeah, that's sort of...
Well, that sounds nasty, doesn't it?
Yes.
Sarah, I was just wondering, how does this kind of affect your functioning? So what things can or can't you do, and do you have strategies to try and contain it at all?
Yeah, of course. So sitting, definitely sitting, that's why I'm standing, I don't mind, it's better help. You know, sitting, definitely a lot more anxiety. I don't go to school anymore because it just, everybody was sitting down, and it's just finished. It was finishing in the same structure. I just had crying spells, and I had the attacks, and I tried to do my work, and then it came, and because the stresses, and it's just a vicious cycle. I couldn't really, so I've decided to go online from there and sort of structure my life to that nasty disease.
Did any of your schoolmates notice when this would happen?
Yes, one, when I was 15, one of my friends, she was looking at me and she said, "Oh, you look like in pain." I said, "Well," I didn't say anything. I don't really like to, you know, feeling pity for myself. No, that's not my nature. But
did you have to tell family members or somebody at some point?
I told my auntie ages ago, but it didn't. My symptoms sort of escalated as the time went. I didn't tell them for quite long. Some people understand, some people don't.
What kind of reactions have you had?
Oh, that's amazing. Oh, you're lucky. Oh, yeah. Oh, you're sort of making it up. It's just an excuse. And then some good reactions. And I've noticed when sort of I feel understanding the symptom, I guess it's sort of correlated over the brain, everything, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that must be terrible.
How do those reactions make you feel, those different reactions?
Experienced. Sort of I've looked, I see the world sort of from different angles. I sort of appreciate me experiencing different things, I guess.
And in terms of medical kind of input, have you sought medical help? And if so, what have you found the services you've been provided?
Okay. That was a tough journey. I was going to doctors. They didn't really know. They kept sort of guessing or giving me the antidepressants. Maybe it's in your head. That was one of the toughest thing. And then I went to San Diego this year and then it said, "Oh, have you been examined down there?" I said, "No, never." I said, "Really?" And actually they gave me antidepressants, which made me a really bad reaction. I was in mental health hospital for around a few months.
You were in a mental health hospital?
I was, yes. Really? In 2018, I was in mental health hospital because I think I had definitely a psychotic episode.
A psychotic episode?
I did.
That was when you were on the medication?
Yeah, and I stopped it and it stopped, I don't know.
What was the symptoms of the psychotic episode?
I was sort of in touch of the reality and I couldn't tell what's dream. And sort of when I got the symptoms, I feel sort of similar. I wouldn't say it's a psychotic episode, but I feel like it's sort of blurry, like in the mat, and then I come back. But I'm sort of aware. It's just hard to think for me.
Must be.
Yeah. Oh. Sounds like must be horrible to have to deal with. It's like something that's kind of disabling you being able to do things all the time. Yeah.
And when you go for help and the professionals, they don't understand the situation, it sounds to me like they just try this, try that, try this, try that, but nothing has worked, has it?
No, nothing has worked so far. That's why I went to the California. I didn't sort of give up searching for help, and there are two leaders that are eradicating that disorder, and very blessed with it.
So you reached out to the people eradicating the disorder, and what reaction did they have to you?
The one in San Diego?
Yeah.
Definitely. He was more experienced about that disorder. He sort of knew. I finally felt like I'm getting the concrete information rather than just, "Oh, I do feel sympathy for you, you know. That must be horrible." Well, I know. I sort of looked for answers, really.
How old were you when you spoke to the person in San Diego?
I was 19. That was last year.
So from 14 then to 19, you were out in the wilderness with this. People were just trying this and that and nothing was working.
Yeah.
So for 5 years to go through that, I can't imagine how frustrated you must have been.
At the end, I was.
Was you on the verge of giving up? You're like, oh.
Yeah, I had suicidal sort of attempts, yeah.
Wow. And did you develop any of your own strategies to like minimize the symptoms? So was there like certain situations, either physical or psychological stressful situations that you avoided, for example? Or
I sort of accepted I can't do it. I just have to wait for, let's hope, another day. When I sleep off sort of, and then the day, and then the thing is building up, and then it's my life is sort of like a roller coaster.
Sarah, can I ask a personal question?
Yes, I can.
What age did you start having sexual intercourse?
I didn't have it.
You haven't?
No.
No, you're... Okay.
I do feel pain. And that was one of the questions that the doctors asked, because that's actually a cause. Can you insert a tampon? And I was like, I could never tolerate it. And then I was in foster care. So my mom was sort of saying, oh, you can't do this. I said, and I couldn't explain. I didn't know why, what's wrong with me. And that was one of his questions. And then he kept going. He was like, okay, when you touch your belly button, do you feel discomfort? I said, oh, yes. Okay. And, you know, and say, oh, you might have prolactin vestibulogenia. I was like, oh, what's that? You know, it's when you have a lot of muscles and a lot of the things are cross-stitched. And I was like, oh, so that could be your cause. I need to see you to prove it. And he did prove it.
So that was your cause?
Yeah, that is my cause.
So it's muscles all around there?
It's a mast cells. I have too many mast cells in the vestibular area. So when he needs to get rid of that area, and he numbed the area, and I didn't feel the pain. I was like, what? Yeah, that was for 2 minutes. And then
So it's not a brain thing then, it's a muscle thing.
Yeah, the problem is here.
So what is the solution?
I need to get a surgery.
What sort of surgery is it?
Huh? You get rid of your sort of the vestibule and then they stitch it together. You don't have the nerves, the area that is too many muscles. He'll confirm with the pathology that it was the cause.
And in terms of this kind of psychological element, are there certain like situations that make it worse, or is it related to stress in any way at all?
Definitely stress. Well, stress makes everything worse, doesn't it?
Yeah. Wow. Do you find yourself in a lot of stressful situations at the moment?
I guess that's sort of my personality. I do get quite emotional myself anyway. But yeah, it's inevitable, really.
Inevitable, of course. Everyone feels stressed.
So what about your relationships then, like in terms of finding a partner, things like that? What goes through your head, and do you have to be careful?
Well, I was quite lucky. I do have a partner that's my best friend, so I was quite lucky with that. I didn't look for anybody, but it just sort of happened. But in terms of social situations, I don't have the sort of strength to do it. I don't know. I can't really predict. I feel too sort of ashamed sometimes, and my mood can switch like that, and I don't really want to answer any questions. And it's sometimes when the symptoms go so bad, every little thing is sort of disrupting. And you know, I sort of linked to this, you know,
social situations.
No, sort of too many little factors can trigger it. And so everything from vision, I can hear too many, like every little thing. So
your senses heightened.
Yeah,
yes.
That's sort of linking with.
So do you go to like many social situations, like meals out and stuff like that? Or do you avoid
Absolutely
all that?
Not.
No.
With my auntie, I will, but because she understands. But usually, no. I don't.
And have you met many other people with this kind of disorder?
I've met a group there are three groups on Facebook. One is the safe one, you get the interviewed. And yes, I have around 800 members there.
Wow.
Not too many.
Wow.
Usually thousands. But
so you said, you know, you're lucky to have found a partner who's your best friend.
Mm-hmm.
Did your partner know beforehand, or was it something you had to explain to your partner later on?
I sort of.
Oh, you're right to put the glass down as well.
I'm sorry.
You know, it's the anxiety. Sorry.
It's okay.
He knew from the start, because that's sort of. No, he knew from the start because I didn't really feel fair. I explained it.
And what was his reaction?
That he can. That, you know, he doesn't have to put up. How do I explain it? He doesn't really, like, he can be What's the nice word for that?
He can work a ways around.
Without it.
Without it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And which I was like, okay.
So very sweet. Yeah. Yeah.
Very supportive, incredibly supportive.
Yeah. Definitely.
How old were you when you were having the suicidal thoughts?
It was last year.
And what stopped you from doing it?
What stopped me from doing it?
And how did it get so bad that you were pushed to suicidal thoughts?
Yeah, just the doctors. It's just the way in San Diego sort of seems so unreachable. And the doctors didn't sort of really have the answers. And I sort of wanted to rely. I thought there was something wrong with me as well. And yeah.
It must have been quite hard when this was all happening to tell people, right? So was there like certain people, like close friends or family members that you felt you could trust versus people that you couldn't approach?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So how did you actually approach those kind of conversations? Do you remember?
I avoided it for a long time. And it's hard for me to explain it. It's, even if I try, very few people do understand.
Did people start to notice your behaviour who were family members, and it got to a point where you felt you had to explain somewhat, otherwise they were going to think there were other things happening?
No, I didn't care at that point.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. No, I was like...
No. You'd had enough.
Yeah. No.
So you've talked about standing up as your preferred position. That's why you're here, stood up today.
Yeah.
What about when you're sleeping? What does that position do?
When I'm sleeping on my tummy always, and sort of with my with my legs sort of in number four, so it's less pressure as I have. Sometimes I can't sleep because of that, because the unwanted feelings are beseeching and waking me at night. My auntie said I had it at night. I was like, oh really? I couldn't feel it, but she.
She could feel
it. Yeah, she could tell me I have sort of pain in my face, and sort of I was, you know.
While you're sleeping, oh God.
Yeah, that's weird.
And what about when you're out and about? Like, I don't know, for example, going shopping, etc. First of all, do you do those things? And if you're out, how does it affect you, and how do you control it or minimize it?
I'm sort of fine. I try to focus on one thing. Sometimes I have to stop and sort of I have this punishment in there. And yes, I do those things, but not. I don't do it sort of consistently. I do it when I try. I learned to not beat myself about it, and sort of be accepting of when I do have the strength to do it, or when I don't. Oh well.
What about exercising, running?
It fluctuates. I don't know. For me, is more of a cycle of everything being linked up. So when my mood can quite fluctuate. So when I'm feeling down, I usually wouldn't. I do try to. Push myself and
push yourself. But does it come on while you're exercising sometimes? No,
it doesn't.
Wow.
No, it doesn't. When I'm running, it's harder when I'm running because I have this trousers and sort of it rubs, then it does come. But when I'm cycling, I can't cycle. But usually I wear dresses to not have the, I don't have the underwear.
No underwear. Okay.
Seriously.
Bless you.
Okay. What about when you go to the bathroom? Is that painful?
Yeah, I have a urinary frequent. I go to the bathroom quite a lot. It's not painful. It can be painful it can be painful.
Do you think there's misconceptions about your condition?
Yes, and it's quite stigmatized.
Do you mind telling some of our viewers what are these misconceptions? Debunking some of them, telling us what.
We just are sex addicts. And we sort of, I don't
know. Some of the misconceptions is that you enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But from my understanding, it's not a sexualized thing at all, is it?
It's completely involuntary. It's
your nervous system going wrong.
Yeah. And it's one of your motives to come, you know, to talk to us today to debunk these misconceptions. And also you said, you know, there might be someone out there who's 14 now who this is starting with, and they might go online and find you now, and you could help that person.
Yeah, that was sort of my reason to come here, because a lot of people might suffer in silence like I used to do.
You did for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So what would your advice be to anybody like that watching this?
It's like breast cancer, really. Sort of, they shouldn't be, just because it's sort of that part, shouldn't be ashamed of that. The breast cancer, don't get me, it's horrible. However, it's not stigmatized, and it's, well, the help is accessible for us. It's not. And
it's because it's got the word orgasm in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also with a lot of people have committed suicide because of that, if we do sort of read. And because that's why the Dr. Goldstein really pushed to find. And he is such a dedicating person, because two of his patients have committed suicide before 10 years ago.
So it sounds like what you were saying before, that help is available, but it's quite hard to find. But once you find it, there are experts that know how to address it.
Yeah, there was one in San Diego, one in the Netherlands.
Yeah, it does say it. Should we read some of this?
How important is the Facebook group to you? How helpful has that been?
Very helpful. I found a mentor, Linda. She was a Dr. Goldstein's patient as well. I travelled there and seen her.
And did she get the operation?
She had the same operation.
And has her life completely changed?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah, and she had two operations, because the other one, she had the spines. I don't need that, luckily. But yes.
Does she get any kind of symptoms nowadays?
Very, very little. And when... And she says PGAD is under control, then she just learns to breathe.
So that's quite encouraging, isn't it, that the operation can really make a difference?
Yeah.
And you're trying to raise money to get the operation yourself?
Yeah,
I am.
Do you have like a donation page or anything like that?
I've set it up myself before. And yeah, I've set it up, and some people were so supportive, and I did raise £300, which I used for the ticket to San Diego. And my auntie helped me a lot with sort of getting there as well, the support.
How much money do you need now for the operation?
$9,600.
$9,600. So that's what, about £6,000-7,000, is it?
And accommodation, wasn't it? And flights.
Yeah,
so that out. So we're going to read some of the stuff that you've wrote and discuss it.
Okay,
so start from the beginning. I post this information because other people may suffer in silence with the same issue, and like me, not even knowing there are others out there to help them. That is not normal, and there is help. After being pressed down to the wall of hesitation, I've finally broken it, hoping family and friends and other fellow human beings could help to relieve Sarah's most unrelented, underhanded physical and emotional and spiritual pain. Almost 6 years ago, Sarah was defeated by a truly deliberating disorder. It is
debilitating.
Yeah. Sorry.
It's okay. Don't worry.
I'll get there in the end. Yeah, it is only... do you want to read this? Sorry. When I'm pulling my eyes.
I wrote in the third person, so it's easier for me to post. I don't
know. That's very good, though.
Do you prefer that I read it verbatim, or do you want me to summarise?
Do you want to start this again? Because, yeah, I was completely...
Just go, take it. What was debilitating? Continue from debilitating.
Okay. People think I can't read now.
Almost 6 years ago, Sarah was defeated by a truly debilitating disorder. It's unceasing, all-encompassing, with an ability to wreak emotional, spiritual, and physical havoc. And then you go on to say that it was first reported in medical journals in 2001, and it didn't even get an official name until recently. So therefore, it's an extremely rare and newly identified disorder. And you were saying that there's two leaders of study, one in San Diego, one in the Netherlands, which you were mentioning before. Sarah didn't tell anyone of the physical, emotional and spiritual torture she was going through for a while.
Hold on a minute. So you contacted somebody in the Netherlands as well, did you?
No, I just seen it on the list. And no, I didn't contact them. I just contacted one in San Diego just because he had a free sort of courtesy call for 20 minutes. I've learned so much in 20 minutes than with the doctors here in 4 years. But
could you tell us something of what he said in those 20 minutes?
Oh my goodness, I even recorded it. Yes, I can. Firstly, he predicted how my weather was here. Then he asked me the key question of the tampons, sort of my medical history, which was a key. And he was so knowledgeable and told me so many facts, and I felt understood. And yeah.
What are some of the facts?
Pardon?
What are some of the facts?
Sorry.
Like the facts, because you said he mentioned lots of facts about the condition.
Yeah, he did, about the condition. You know, some medical jargon, really. I didn't really, and I tried to sort of keep up. And yeah, he mentioned about vestibular dyspnea, that I might have that. He thinks why, and he explained why. And also he explained the examinations that I would have to have that in order for them to diagnose it. And he did contact one of the doctors here in the UK. He emailed them immediately, and he said she cannot tolerate a tampon, she has the thing. And yeah, that was conversation between them. That was quite funny.
So it sounds like there are no kind of experts in the UK that knowledge about this at all, is that
the thing correct? Is they told me there are. And for me, yeah, they should tell me. They don't know what they're doing in the first place. It was kind of, I wasted so much time, but oh well, nothing happens with them.
So the UK doctor then that he mentioned,
yeah.
Did you go to see that doctor?
Yes, I have.
And what happened with that doctor?
I went privately and an hour. I paid quite a lot of money for a letter, which I posted, and it was a longer letter. It just stated how horrible, in such a horrible condition I am, really. I didn't really feel like I'm going forward anymore. At that point, that's when I started escalating.
Because the thing is, you don't just want a doctor to describe what you've described to them. You want a treatment plan, right? You want a solution.
Yeah, never had it.
Did that doctor perform any examinations?
MRI, and oh, it looks normal. And the other one seen, I was like, well, no, it doesn't look normal.
So there's nowhere in the UK that offers this surgery?
Not the sort of specific, because in America, they sort of were doing it for experimental, and it did turn out to be quite good. No, they're not actually, because they don't have the guidelines in the UK to perform that sort of specific
specialist.
Yeah, it's,
and America's kind of at the front of a lot of medical technology.
Mm. Now I've experienced that, yes.
Mm. Wow. Should we read a bit more of that?
Yeah, go for it.
It's completely undesired, unlooked for, every second of every minute of every month and every year, genital arousal. You cannot avoid it. There is no escape, ever. It is not pleasant, it's not spoken of, and therefore most doctors don't know about its existence. And if they do, they have a tendency to throw the comments like, wow, I wish my wife would have this.
Wow. Someone actually said that to you?
Yeah.
They did?
Mm-hmm.
A doctor?
Mm-hmm. When I was sort of 18.
No! Oh my God.
That is
was that in the UK?
That's disgusting.
Yeah.
Was that a UK doctor?
Yeah, I was like, gonna kill it. It's fun.
Bloody ashamed of yourself, you're watching this.
Yeah, that's terrible. It is as close as a lake of fire that one can experience. How do you keep yourself feeling pure when you're tormented constantly with feelings that you don't want? It takes every element of energy remain to put a camouflage on for people around you in order to at least appear normal. Always on edge. It's insanity inducing. People who have it commit suicide. Sarah has had two suicide attempts and many suicidal ideations.
How did you try to kill yourself?
With I literally with the overdoses of sertraline.
Overdoses.
Yeah, and I do have some scars, but it was, yeah, it was sort of that peak of a sanity inducing. I didn't really want to do it. I just didn't know how to live anymore. That's the truth.
And now that you're on some sort of path, I know you've still got a way to go in terms of raising money, but you're on a path of treatment. Has that helped with your mental health overall?
Don't tell me about it. Yeah, if you sort of feel the worst part of that condition, it's hopelessness, really. It's telling, the doctor's telling you that you're going to get better when you see you're getting worse. And you're sort of fighting yourself. You want to be the civilized person that sort of goes and listens to the people around them. But sort of I started questioning things. So is that really? And sort of the battles in your head. Yeah.
Okay. Or they lose every sense of self they have. Because it's so isolating, it destroys lives and relationship. It drives Sarah crazy. Families and relatives saw the effect at home. Sarah would be exhausted and every move would cause her hellish sort of pain. The monster isolated her. Most of the time she would suffer in the bedroom alone. In family gatherings, she could not sit comfortably or at all, even at dinner. She used to stand up in the back of the class getting a lot of questions from other students. That caused her to have sudden crying spells and panic attacks. Nobody could understand why. Everyone thought that this has a pure psychological background and it's still misunderstood.
So when you were stood at the back of the class, Sarah,
yeah,
did your teachers understand why you were stood at the back of the class?
Yeah, they seemed to. They seemed to understand at that point, yeah.
They did, but the students couldn't know.
No, I
because,
didn't tell them.
So then they would bully you and stuff, would they?
No, just ask a lot of questions.
They were curious.
Yeah.
Curious. How did you find the teachers in general? Were they supportive, would you say? Did anybody try and talk to you about it?
No, they were, they fit, I could sort of explain it. Oh, she says she has that, let her do this. And yeah, I think they were neutral, not really supportive, not really unsupportive.
Yeah, that's not what you want there really, is it? When you're that young, right? Teachers should be supporting you.
Did you, when the students asked you questions, did you want them to know the truth or were you concealing it?
I told them it's a medical condition on my back sort of hurts.
Ah.
Yeah, so because, well, I wasn't lying.
Yeah, that's clever.
Yeah. I think most people would probably do that, wouldn't they?
Yeah, definitely.
I wouldn't have the courage to say anything else. We made an appointment with the world leader, Dr. Erwin Goldstein, in the research to eradicate this agony. He said that there is nothing worse that he knows of as far as medical conditions go. We were planning to make trips to San Diego. That's where his office is. The doctor has already an assumption of what the cause of this monster is.
So you wrote this just before you went?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Depending on the cause, it can fall under spinal cord abnormalities. Not in that case. Through the consultations with the front office, they would compose the process of many imaging, counselling because of the trauma, testing, trips, and staying in the hospital. Summing up, that would be approximately...
I thought.
Says that'd be approximately $90,000.
I thought so, because of the a lot of counselling, a lot of trip. I thought I will go there maybe 10 times. That was my estimate.
And then, so you thought 90,000 because you thought you were going there 10 times, then you went over, and he goes, no, it's just the once.
Yeah. So I don't know how much money I really do, but I really want that surgery done, really.
We know what the surgery is. Yeah, we can work out the costs of accommodation, because how long do you have to stay over there?
4 days.
So 4 days accommodation.
Because 4 days, purely because 3 days before he will give me a lot of shockwaves to, and I think to eradicate, to ease my nerves before, something like that. And 1 day for the surgery, it will be a whole day. And he would give me a lot of sedation so I don't feel, and I have to go as fast as I can.
Yeah, and I imagine you need some time for recovery, right? Yeah,
6 months in
here. But you can fly back straight after the surgery. Oh, really? Okay. Sarah cannot go on like this anymore, and she desperately needs help. It's extremely hard for me to ask. It's not in my nature, but I desperately want to survive and encourage other people to seek for help, because there is always a way out. I need to reach out. Do you want to carry on?
Yeah, keep going.
Please, if you have any means, do so. Contribute to this crowdfund account. It will truly change Sarah's life and end the crippling disorder that takes too many lives in silence. P.S. To clarify, I am Sarah. I've written it in the third person to make it easier for me to share. If you've made it to the end, thank you ever so much. And then it goes on to say that Sarah has got no non-parental support at all. She cannot get a credit card because the salary must be at least £10,000. She's a full-time student and can't get a full-time job and therefore can't get a loan.
Yeah, I used to work as an activities coordinator and I used to faint because of, and I couldn't get too much stress. I can't.
How often do you faint from it?
I do faint when it gets sort of too much. So 3 attacks, then I feel so dizzy.
And if you don't mind me asking, because it's a bit personal, what's the kind of situation with your parents and their understanding of this? Are they supportive at all?
I actually don't. That's a good question. I don't know, actually. My parents are not really present. My father at all. My mother, she has issues of her own and she has issues. Nothing really. You know, she has...
They're not in a position to help.
They're not in a position to help me, really.
Because it was your aunt that you were close to, wasn't it, that was helping you, your auntie?
Yeah. Jen's friend.
I know her, yeah. She's a wonderful woman. Mean cook. Yeah. So I bet you're having fun there. But yeah.
Based on Sarah's history, the doctor is suspecting a pudendal nerve pathology and vestibulodynia. The treatment comprises physical examination, tests and surgeries such as neurolysis and entrapment. They have found out that this will be available. This is a breakthrough that will also help other girls and women and occasionally men with the same devastating matter. The downside of this all is that the insurance will not cover it, none of it, because they do not recognise it as a legitimate health condition yet.
Yet, I said it.
So they don't recognise it at this present moment?
In the UK.
So you mentioned that it does happen to men, but it's a lot less common. Mm-hmm. Have you seen
it's some called of these different priapism?
That's what the guy I knew had. It was up all
it's
day.
Horrible.
It was up all day, yeah.
I've actually heard of that, yeah.
Yeah.
So you said about these pages on
it's
Facebook.
It's like you've been raped by your whole...
Well, sorry, carry on.
Sorry.
Who said you've been raped?
No. It's like being raped by your own body.
Oh, gotcha. Because it's just non-stop.
Yeah. It's a trap.
It's to do with the blood with priapus, isn't it?
Yeah.
So these Facebook pages, do you ever get creeps or weirdos try and troll you on them?
No, because that's a safe one. That's okay. The one I'm on. It's a safe one.
Are there a lot of unsafe ones?
No, there's only one with Linda Cataldo in it.
Have you ever had any kind of trolls or hatred from the internet?
No, because I don't like people.
Best way.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the end.
Yeah. Okay. Wow.
So what do you do now?
In my life?
Yeah.
Try to. I am a student and I teach online. Sort of standing. I try the best things I can cope with.
So you have a standing workstation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
And what subjects do you teach?
English or foreign. ESL, that's a foreign language, and biology.
So what's an average day like for you?
I can't predict it. That's why I can... I can't predict it. That's why I can't work.
Because you never know what's going to happen.
So you can't live a normal life?
No.
No.
What about what would be a realistic best day for you and worst day for you?
For me the worst time is really wanting to do so much but I can't.
Yeah.
And it's the limitation of physical along with psychological actually.
So at its worst are you like sort of crouched over in pain or are you lying in bed or are you walking around? So what kind of...
Well, all different position. I can sit. I can sort of sit down and trying to. When you think you're gonna, that's the thing. That's the worst thing. When you think you're gonna go orgasm, it's gonna go away. It's even worse. It makes it worse, and they're just on top of each other. And sometimes there are days I can't sleep. I can't think. I can't. Yeah.
Sounds like a nightmare.
Must be scenario. Difficult to plan things.
That's what, yeah, that's why I can't go to school. I actually don't plan with anybody anything because I don't know. I planned to go out with my uncle. I couldn't do it.
That's not a life you want, is it?
And if, when you have the occasional good days, are you able to function to a degree on a good day? Like, would you be able to go out and about? Like, would you be able to go shopping, cinema, for example, on a good day?
Or... Cinema?
Yeah.
Absolutely not. Yeah. You're sitting. Yeah, probably going on a walk. And really being in my zone, because I'm an introvert. I do like my own company. I like my music. I like doing things on my own.
Sean's one too.
What about your partner? Has your partner's life, does he have to adjust his life in certain ways? Or?
It doesn't feel like that, no. It comes quite naturally to us.
That's good.
Yeah, that's good.
Wow.
Thank you.
Yeah,
well,
thank
that's
you.
All right. Thank you.
And you know, for people watching this then, so anyone perhaps who finds this video who has this condition, what do you say to them?
Do not give up no matter how hard it sort of seems. The worst thing is hopelessness and you have the right to feel horrible. You have the right. Do not beat yourself about it. It's hard to conform to the society when they go so fast. It's hard to follow up. It's as it said in an article I wrote, you take all the energy to appear normal. And yeah, it does get tough, but you're not alone. And let me know and I will add you to the support group.
Well said. So we're going to put your crowdfund link in the below the video.
Thank you so much.
Do you want us to include the Facebook group or do you have any socials or any contact information you want us to include?
I don't really have any other you can do Facebook.
So include the Facebook group, is that, or your Facebook page?
I don't really have there anything about my disorder, though. I put it on private.
So maybe the group.
The Facebook group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Private as well, though.
Is it? Well,
so they've got to apply to join. Is that how it works? Which is good, because that keeps the idiots out.
Exactly. That's it.
Stop the trolls. So, yeah.
Well, I don't know.
So if somebody's got the disorder, send them to the Facebook group, and they have to do a... Was it a quiz?
Da-da-da. Somebody calls you.
What? Phones you up and interviews you about it?
No, not phones you. Radio.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, wow. Yes, tight group.
It is a tight group because it's...
It needs to be, doesn't it?
Yeah. We don't need idiots.
So during this interview, I've been watching your body language then, and sometimes you've been going like this with your hand. Is that because you're fending off an attack?
I sort of... Because if I would sit down, it would just escalate. I don't want it that. It's possibly that, yeah. It's also anxiety. It's mixed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you're a very good speaker. You've been very composed.
I tried.
Yeah, and you know, considering what you've been through and you've never told your story before, you're very articulate. And I think people are going to watch this and the hearts are going to be open and they're going to reach out and support you. So we really appreciate you coming along.
Thank you so much.
It's such an important thing to tell because... Like you said, there could be people out there going through it who are on the verge of killing themselves like you were, and they could find this and it could save some lives. So thank you.
Well, yeah. No,
thank you for sharing your story.
Yeah,
it's very
thank
brave.
You so.
It might not be actually that rare. sort of this condition because not many people talk about
it. Hopefully after watching this, people will come forward.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? If they're ashamed, because it says, when I read the introduction, it says, a lot of them are ashamed and don't ever get any treatment. So there could be a hell of a lot more people out there once the awareness is raised that could unite to get the treatment spread around the world.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Brilliant.
Thank I'll come you give you a hug.
Oh. Oh.
Get up, my bad back.
Thank you for having me.
That's all right. Do you want any water or anything?
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you very much. That was great. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you. Really. It was lovely to meet you.
Here at Boomer and Jen, we offer a wide range of organic or recycled clothing. We all know our planet is important. We only have this one. So it's vital that we all work together to slow down and reverse the changes to the environment. Whilst we all know that big industry are having a significant effect on pollution, here at Boomer and Jen, we believe that if we all make small changes, we can do our part. Fast fashion causes detrimental effects to the planet. Not only is nearly 20% of global wastewater produced by the fast fashion industry, but there is a considerable amount of fast fashion ending up in landfill. So let's move away from fast fashion items that are only worn once or twice and start wearing extremely comfortable, durable and environmentally friendly clothing and ethical jewellery. Boomer and Jen was founded in a quiet town in Devon in 2018. It has now gone from strength to strength as the world is becoming more aware of the current climate situation, helping our customers to buy sustainable, quality clothing. All of our products are fair trade and registered with the Global Organic Textiles Standard Association. Check us out on organiccottonclothing.co.uk.
This podcast is sponsored by Gadfly Press. We are proud to announce the publication of The Girl Gambler, a young woman's story of her escape from gambling addiction. The story of a young girl's entrapment in gambling addiction, the true advert for problem gambling and how it controlled her every movement, every thought, and almost took her life. How the guilt and shame that go hand in hand with addiction stopped her from reaching out for help for 8 years as she didn't feel it was okay for a young female to be a problem gambler. How she believed it was a male-dominated problem and how eventually she did find the tools that enabled her to become free of her addiction.
Available worldwide on Amazon. Link in the description box below this video. Thank you for supporting our sponsor.